It's Rake the Moon, episode 11. More episodes than games left of the season, perhaps. Coming up, success at Gillingham for the first time in a long time, and also a short time. Is heading for the Medway with 3 points since the days of Steve White also indicate something more substantive than the end of a run of four games without a win. Plus some thoughts on Town at Tranmere and why League Two is making as little sense as ever. But first, the infamous banter section. So this is Rake the Moon episode 11. I have to say starting 11s not only make me think of football, but they do make me think of cricket as well. The tossing of the coin, all that interviewing the Pakistan captain as to who they've left out this time, possibly under orders from the PCB and possibly not. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. So the point was, Sam, apart from football and its 11, what are your other favourite sports that you will happily spend time consuming?
Well, I mean, cricket really is the other one. Obviously, I worked in cricket for many years, 7 years, I think. That was a great time that I had. And it's a very different type of journalism and a very different sort of life being involved in cricket coverage compared to football coverage, particularly lower league football coverage. But there's something about all forms of cricket that are incredibly enjoyable, regardless of the tempo and the pace and the format. I find it thrilling and a really captivating spectacle. Cricket is the main one, but I'm one of these people that will sit down and watch anything if time allows. Obviously, with a couple of kids under six, there isn't so much of that time to be allowed at the moment. But if there's a decent rugby game on, if it's the Olympics have come around, then I'm always happy to sit down in front of the telly. But often there seems to be too many chores around the house to be done to be able to sit down too long, particularly when I have, according to everybody in my life, got a job where I'm paid to watch the football. So, yeah, obviously that grates with all of us. And I'm sure that you've had that many times down the years as well, Andrew.
Yes. No, you're a bit of a quadrennial curling man. If I put a gun to your head and ask you which is your preferred form of cricket, are you short form or long form?
Long form. I'm a test purist, I guess. Simply because the sort of narrative arcs and the undulations of a game of cricket are much more stark and vast in test cricket or four-day cricket than they can be in one-day or T20 or 100-ball cricket. So I do enjoy all forms, but I would always prefer a day at the test match over anything else.
Well, speaking of narrative arcs and long form, let's dig into the latest state of Swindon's season. So with four games without a win for Swindon, including that narrow loss at home to MK Dons, victory achieved on Tuesday night in Kent by 2-0 against Gillingham to end what Ian Holloway was calling in his pre-match press conference on Thursday, a little bit of a blip. That was his kind of interpretation. He's much more hopeful that his side has got back on track with some help from Ryan Tafazoli heading a lot of balls and Gillingham missing one or two balls in the air when they needed to, and so on and so forth. So, firstly, Sam, I don't know how much you want to kind of dissect that Gillingham game and your thoughts on it from a distance, and I can give the in-ground perspective, if you like.
It was quite quiet ground, wasn't that? That was my from a distance perspective in my chateau. I think that it seemed like it was a very quiet place, but I guess you could sort of understand that based on Gillingham's run recently. In terms of the game itself, I thought that, you know, it was obviously scrappy. It was a bit slow in the first half. I think Holloway has said that he felt that his team earned the win in the second half by scrapping it out through the first half. I thought really they kind of owed the win to the defence rather than anything else, just managing several last ditch blocks and tackles, and obviously Connor Ripley making a couple of fantastic saves. So they sort of rode their luck a little bit, but when they had ridden their luck, they still had to show some clinical edge up front when the chances came. And those two goals were really superbly taken. And, you know, they're not easy chances, either of them, either for Drinan going through the middle without the ball at his feet and having to get it down with a couple of touches on his head and then hit it first time with his wrong foot. That's a really decent piece of skill. And then Holman with an excellent first time shot to the bottom corner, keeping it under control. And those are your two shots on target, and it's the two goals that win it. And that's the clinical edge that was the difference, and that's the clinical edge that it's been missing previously. So, it was not the sort of win that will necessarily get people talking, but it's the sort of win that you need if you're going to challenge. I think I called it pig in lipstick points. And I think that's the sort of return we need now, between now and the end of the season. They need to grind out some of these. And if they can keep managing that sort of result, regardless of the performance at the end, no one will remember the performances.
Yeah, no, I think they've left themselves not a great deal of margin for error after these four games. I still think there were some good things in the matches that they didn't win. You know, I think a draw would have been pretty fair against MK Dons, who they, you know, did cause some damage to, did create some chances to. I think they played sort of Colchester on Wednesday, albeit at home. I'm not really sure. Colchester, who, you know, do have some decent attacking players. Jack Payne, most notably, didn't really kind of lay a glove on them. And then that Crawley game was very strange because there was 45 minutes where they were bad. When they threw on all the attackers, they kept shredding Crawley. And then they did something stupid at the end. So you can try and rationalise and take bits of it, but at this stage it is a little bit like there's nothing quite like winning, and the manner of it can be, as you say, considered and pocketed later. And perhaps that has re-injected some sort of sense of belief in a group that this might sound ridiculous, and I may get pelters with this. I wonder if this is a group that is still sort of finding itself a bit, which seems ridiculous to say at 10, less than 10 games to go of the season.
Well, I think you've got something there, but it's a group that's been assembled since January is trying to find itself. I think that the group that was assembled in the summer did find itself, you know, pretty quickly. But with the additions, it has struggled to find a rhythm. Obviously, there's been a lot of in and out from the squad for various reasons, some of it strategic, some of it injuries. Obviously, Holloway will continue to point at the players that he's either missing because they were recalled by a parent club or because they're injured now as being critical to the way in which his team functions. And he's got a big thing about not only Finlay Munro, but the fact that he doesn't have the dynamic down the right with Glatzel and Snowden that he felt was really operating well from both a press and a counter-attacking perspective, and he's had to therefore rebuild his flanks on both sides, and he'll say that that has impacted it. I think there's a whole plethora of different reasons why it has been harder for this team to gel since the turn of the year, and we can point to many of them. I'm sure we will in the next few minutes, but I think you're right that it doesn't feel like they still know what their best team is. And that's not just because of players being absent for various reasons. I think that they've got a squad that doesn't quite fit together in an 11. In a squad, it looks quite good, but try and make an 11 out of that squad, and it can be a bit tricky to find the right dynamics to be as fluent as they have been at their best. And I think because we judge them on their best, then we can cast a little unfair view on what we should be getting from them every week. And I think sometimes the expectations of them have been a little bit high. You know, they've won 20 games this season and they're sitting sixth and in with a chance of pushing for that third place still. They're roughly performing to their budget compared to the rest of the league, roughly in line with that. Obviously there are teams that are significantly outperforming their budget, like Bromley, but they're competing where they should be. What is it that has made it just feel not so convincing? And I think it's probably because on those odd occasions, at Crewe in the first half or against Bolton, they have been absolutely sensational. And we know that they can be sensational, but evidently they can't be sensational all the time. And maybe we've been lured into thinking about how good they can be and not recognizing the actual on-pitch achievements. I don't know. What do you think?
I do think the injuries have been a significant disruptor in that. I suspect if we did manage to pin down Ian Holloway and say, what would be our hypothetical best 11? I think Tom Wilson-Brown would be in that as the sort of left-footed centre-half. Snowden's clearly worked his way into it. So I don't think we can quite underestimate the injury factor. I have a bit of kind of sympathy with what you said about everyone having seen the best and wanting the best all the time, which is kind of understandable but difficult. It's such a matter of perceptions, isn't it? Gillingham have basically come away with a perception of Swindon this season as a kind of gritty side who have the nous to see out wins and can somehow, you know, make blocks and have an excellent goalkeeper. He is a good goalkeeper. I'm not saying that bit's wrong. You know, from those two games where Gillingham could probably legitimately feel they've created enough to get two draws, they've got nothing. So I think that kind of perception of teams is sort of very bent by the fact you see your team, as it were, all the time, and then you get these two sort of isolated chunks of other sides in League Two, and other sides in League Two vary quite a lot, I think, from week to week, or they certainly do, judging by Swindon for a start, and they're one of the better ones. But yeah, there's that kind of rebuilding, and I suppose the January acquisitions haven't all necessarily kind of hit in and sort of flown in. We've seen bits of Borland, who's come in and been part of wins. We saw that little kind of flurry of James Scanlon, who scored and against Oldham, but hasn't really been in favour since. So you know that those kind of midfielders that they've brought in haven't really kind of grabbed a place in the starting lineup as well. And Fletcher Holman's been great, but the question is he ultimately going to be more effective for the rest of the season coming off the bench? Because off the bench he's had a great impact. The starts he's had, not quite so much. There's some random jottings I think I've come up with.
Yeah, and a lot of it makes sense. And I think that we shouldn't underestimate what has happened with the whole Kenilworth Road debacle and the subsequent impact there, and that certainly took up a lot of emotional capacity for players and management. It was lodged in Holloway's brain for a long period, and potentially there was a bit too much focus on that, and that certainly led to the disruption. That run of games in January against the sides at the top of the league, where for all bar the Notts County game, they were competitive and could quite easily have got a point at least from each of them. That they didn't, and that will have obviously put a big blow in it. Missing out on the cup game at Man City, you know, a year after missing out on a trip to Anfield, that will have impacted them psychologically for a brief period. I think that there's a lot of contributing factors that have led to 2026 being a lot trickier to negotiate than 2025. And that's why maybe it's too presumptive of us to say, well, one win at Gillingham changes everything. I just think that there's been a vibe shift within the building there over the last few days, which indicates that maybe that something has changed. Maybe that it was just a pressure valve that needed to be released to just get 3 points. Don't mess it up. You know, and they didn't mess it up and they got 3 points, and that can add to a bit of confidence. And they know that they can go to a team this weekend who are in an absolutely diabolical run of form. And if they score first and early, both of which have been something that Swindon have struggled to do of late, then you can just imagine what the reaction will be at Tranmere and how they could potentially fall apart. And they've been conceding goals relentlessly of late. So, I think that there is opportunity there, which hopefully won't lead to any sort of complacency. But the blip has had many, many different reasons. And I think many of those can't necessarily be cleaned up by one game, but you do just get a feeling that something shifted as a result of that win on Tuesday.
Yeah, I wonder if there's also a bit of kind of trying to go back to not exactly first principles almost, but a bit of sort of redefinition of what they are. You know, they picked a, it feels like they picked an 11 to sort of pass the ball more at Gillingham, and it seems ironic because obviously they didn't really get anything much in terms of like shots in the first half, but it felt like they more wanted to kind of play a bit, and yeah, just maybe try and sort of have a more Holloway-esque open game where they're a bit more open to sort of outscoring teams, perhaps, rather than thinking in a more conservative sense.
Yeah, I mean, you saw when he went for the basketball approach at Crawley, how devastating they can be against a side that is not potentially as coherent in defence as some of the teams towards the top of the table. And that's the sort of thing that he might well try and implement at Prenton Park, because if he stretches the game and gets his runners going and switches to to and from rather than trying to keep the ball nice and tidy in midfield, then I would imagine that Tranmere will struggle with that. But you would think that, again, first half is more going to be about consolidation and trying to tire out an opposition by keeping the ball, allowing the runners in the second half to come and make a difference. He's talked about finishes a lot throughout the season. He's genuinely got one in his squad at the moment in Fletcher Holman. So why not keep using him in the way that's been most effective? Holman has been most effective when used as a substitute, not when used from the start. So keep going with that approach. If he keeps delivering, then fair enough. I also think that recently the switch to having Ollie Palmer coming off the bench has been more impactful for Palmer to come on in bursts and cause havoc again against slightly tired defences, creating space for Drinan to run into, as he did for the first goal on Tuesday. And so maybe slowly he's starting to establish a structure to a side and a structure to a game. But again, one match might be too much to say it's definitely turned the corner. Just genuinely, the feeling in the building is that there's been a bit of pressure released and that in theory should bode well for him. And it was interesting, Andrew, that what he said on Thursday about how he thinks his team are better as chasers rather than as favourites, as people out in front. And I can see that. And I can see why he feels that he wants his team to be in that position and that he thinks that they'll get better from that. I think this is, you know, you see that in the times that they've come back and rescued points from losing positions, and you see it in the number of late goals that his team scored last year as well. So I think they do feel more comfortable being just behind but within arm's reach. The question is now, how long can they keep themselves within arm's or fingertip reach as we go into these last eight games?
Yeah, I think it sort of forces them to be a bit bolder. I'm quite intrigued by the fact that Ollie Palmer in this sort of withdrawn role has not been a one-off to surprise Bromley. It's now become a bit of a feature off the bench. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how they're doing in mindset. But if they can sort of start well against Tranmere, who I suspect are just going to try and, from what Pete Wild was saying, just, you know, go back to their real sort of first principles there, which is be difficult to score against, and who gives a damn about the aesthetics. So it's gonna be like an interesting match, but I think the poison levels might be off the chart if Swindon can score first. Well, given Swindon have spent long enough in League Two now, too long, we would all argue, I am sure. In theory, we ought to be able to make sense of how it works at this point. And yet sometimes teams make it very hard for you. Oldham, for current example, who Swindon did a double over in some comfort, have now, since that, they have played, if I do a little bit of counting here, They appear to have played 8 games, won 6 of those, drawn the other 2, including a goalless draw at Bromley, and conceded 2 goals in the process. Now, the expected goals nerd in me, because I do kind of keep a certain track on this, has always suggested that at some point Oldham might do a bit better, but that it's the kind of classic run out of nowhere that they had, that Shrewsbury had, that it feels like continues to defy explanation in the division, because it flares up and then suddenly, like something bursting out of the sun, it can just stop as quickly as it started.
Yeah, or it can keep going. If we think about the examples of Bristol Rovers and Doncaster, who both just kept on flying and kept on winning and both got promoted. And there's always one that does it, and you always hope that it's going to be your club. Obviously, you could say that Milton Keynes are sort of doing it, but that's different. But Oldham here, to me, are the real wild card. I think they've left it too late to do something really stupid. But it does feel like they've got it all in their hands to make the playoffs, which really seems ridiculous given how poor they were in the 2 matches against Swindon. And Swindon have managed to score about 15% of the total goals that Oldham have conceded this season. I don't know. Sometimes you get this, don't you? Where one club just has it over the other one, and one team has it over the other one. But whatever they've been doing at Boundary Park has been extraordinary over the last month. But it is something that does happen in League Two, and with some increasing regularity, that in one given season you will see a team do this. But the whole division is a bit schizophrenic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think the quality gap as a rule is sort of narrow enough between top and bottom for football's randomness to really kind of take effect, really, if you see what I mean. So generally I think it's quite hard for one team to really go and batter another. It does happen occasionally where teams just, you know, start slowly and then it all goes wrong and it's all done for. So you wouldn't expect Harrogate to batter anyone and they're 3 up on Tranmere in week by half time. You think of kind of Swindon at Accrington in the reverse, where just kind of started badly and never really recovered. But I think it's more that kind of, you add the sort of relative closeness of the qualities of the teams and football being football, and chaos kind of happens a bit more in this league than anything else. Yeah. So yeah, Oldham have 2 games in hand on most teams, and they've lost less matches than Swindon as well. So they are suddenly lurking like a threat. And it's like the Walsall of last year and of this year is still quite hard to explain. if you look at if you look at all those sort of underlying things, like the infamous expected goals and shots on target and, you know, touches in the opposition box and all the rest of it, they kind of hold up, or they did last season for the first bit where they were just winning all the time, and then when, you know, they, that extraordinary collapse where they could not buy a win. So it's asking a lot of League Two to make sense. Maybe the most sensible thing we can say about League Two is we have to accept it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense, and those sort of margins between teams at the top and bottom take a while to kind of unwind in the way they have, perhaps with MK Dons and Cambridge sort of settling in and really having strong second halves of the season, along with Notts County as well.
It was Joe, wasn't it, the advert, who suggested that maybe Matt Sadler should make himself a first half of the season only head coach and pair up with someone who is particularly proficient in the second half and just go on a sort of biannual sabbatical and let each other do the job. it's such a strange division. But you look at Cambridge, they've drawn 4 of their last 6. There's only 2 teams that are really, apart from Oldham, pushing with some sort of form that you would go, okay, those are promotion challenges. And the interesting thing about League Two, if you speak to people who have the control of the cash, they will say that League Two's correlation between budget and performance is significantly different to League One, which is then slightly different to the Championship, which is different to the Premier League. But there is something about this division where, as you say, that quality gap is just not there. And it's a really, really, really curious division.
It's a bit of a sort of both boxes league, I think. Perhaps maybe less so than the kind of higher divisions where what you do in midfield counts a bit more.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I think the big difference for Swindon's perspective when they've met teams from the division above and done very well against them this year is that the midfield has been given more time to do stuff, and that they've been able to have a little bit more control on games and be able to handle themselves a bit better in midfield. Whereas we have repeatedly looked at Swindon's midfield in league action this year and wondered at times, where is it? Is it missing, or is it just the tactics off, or why are the second balls always being nabbed by somebody else? And I think that genuinely Swindon's current midfield setup is quite suited to playing against sides from the league above who are maybe a little bit more technically adept. But there is there's the craziness, isn't it? It's just chaos. League Two is just one big ball of chaos. And it's quite fun, I think, if you're going to consume it in small bursts. But over the years, and it's been years now for Swindon, that's not fun anymore. And maybe something that's a little bit more technically proficient, a little bit more elegant, a little bit more dynamic, rather than just crash a box, run up the other end, crash a box, stick in a set piece, hope for the best, have a melee, see if we can score. Mm-hmm. That's not fun anymore. It'd be really nice to experience a season of slightly different football, even if it might be a bit of a struggle in the league above. It would be nice to experience something different.
Because you're some kind of sadist or hostage to fortune, you're suggesting we both do our top sevens. So.
I think that we've got to that point. I do my division at the start of the season and stick it on social media so that I can be held accountable for my pathetic predictions. Luckily, my top seven isn't too far away at the moment. So I think it's good to have a bit of a prediction and see how close you get. All good fun, Andrew. I'm sure will use it to beat you with.
Well, I'm very happy that Sean has forgotten or not held me to my suggestion that Barrow might be dark horses at the other end of the table at the start of the season, which has not apparently gone to plan. I should have paid more attention to the fact they let all their good players go over the summer, recruited badly, and I didn't really have them accounting for using five different managers in a season. But I have to hold my hands up. But I did say Newport would struggle, so that wasn't a particular piece of genius, but I feel better. I'll weigh in first and you can mock me as appropriate. I think we assume that MK Dons are going to run on and win it at this stage. The bookmakers do. I think I do. Bromley look like they're kind of running on fumes a bit, but they've got enough of a gap to certainly secure the top three, I think. So I fully expect those two to have a P next to the end of their names come the season end. I think the impression, it's the impressions you get from the two games or the one game, because you know we've not seen Cambridge since the start of the season, is Notts County had a pretty strong second half to the season, and they've had kind of Jatta missing a little bit as well, who's a really impressive forward. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them just pinch third. And then you're clearly going to have Cambridge, Salford and Swindon in the playoffs. I'm not ruling out Swindon making a run for the top three, to be clear. Like I said, as I've saying on Tuesday, that the objective is to get it to you know, be within distance off Cambridge when they go there just before Easter Friday and see how we got on. So, you know, the top six are going to finish as the top six, clearly, in some form. As for the delights of seventh place, I'm quite intrigued to see who Walsall appoint, because I don't think I'd entirely give up on them yet, which may make me somewhat insane. We've obviously had the Oldham hour, but Grimsby feel pretty strong. Grimsby feel like, well, strongish, and they feel like they've been building towards this under David Artell for a while. I know they're the side in seventh, but you know, they had the first season under him, which was like the season of survival. The second season last season, the season of building. So this is meant to, I think, be the season where they hit the playoffs. So I think they might just sort of scramble their way into seventh place, and then potentially we could have back-to-back trips to Grimsby within a couple of weeks, which is what the world is all waiting for. So there's my top seven on the line.
Okay, right. Grimsby's fixture list is relatively kind. I'll give you that. They've got Harrogate, Crawley, Gillingham, Tranmere, and Barrow still to play. So that is fine. Oldham are showing all the signs of being that team, though.
Yes.
That team that does it. That they won't get enough points to go up in third. That would be ridiculous. So for the drama of it, I'll stick them in at seventh. I think Milton Keynes are going to win the league by 5 points. I've been saying the whole way that Bromley aren't going to finish in the top three, and it's very hard to justify that anymore. They do have a really tricky last four or five games of the season. And if they are out of fumes, then they need to have secured top three in the next sort of by Easter, effectively, which I think is possible, potentially. Or by the end of Easter, at least, depending on how results go. So I will have them as third. They managed to stay there. I think that in second place, we'll have Notts County. And that leaves Swindon playing Salford in the playoffs, because we have to play Salford at least two more times, I think, this season. We don't know each other well enough. And Cambridge playing against Oldham. So that's my top seven in a very weird order. So MK Dons, Notts County, Bromley, Cambridge, Swindon, Salford, Oldham. And let's see how wrong that is.
Yeah. Well, but we've broadly agreed in principle, though, that Notts County are going to finish third above Cambridge. So we welcome our new Midlands listeners to the podcast, who will be flooding in delight at that prediction, no doubt. Maybe Cambridge will make us eat our words early next month at the Abbey. But yeah, it just looks like, given the consistency, I think, of the top four, that I wouldn't like to look up between them how few defeats they've had as a group over 2026. It's going to be hard for Swindon just to peg them back, and then it's all into post-season lottery. But if you want to prove us wrong, Mr. Holloway and friends, we'd be more than delighted. But before we go, a reminder, of course, that you can subscribe, and they should subscribe, to the Moonraker for the princely sum of £5 per month, or there are annual options available as well. And you can get bonus things like not merely Sam's reporting, but, as has happened recently, the chance to go to the end of season dinner as one of the Moonraker's subscribers there. And you can imagine all the shenanigans that go on there, although they probably don't these days, because they're all very grown up and civilised. But yes, that's it for us. We will be back at some point next week, depending on Sam's health, for episode 12.